Hello, who just joined?
Good morning, this is Tomas from University of Kentucky.
Hello, Tomas. This is Jennifer Williams. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
How is the baby?
The baby is growing and he is great.
Good. Does he let you sleep?
He does sleep through the night. I'm very lucky.
Okay, that's good.
For now, for now. Hello, who just joined?
Hi Jennifer, it's Jamie. I was
Hi,
just signing
Jamie.
on before I have to jump off here for a minute, and then I'm just going to start another call from a different phone. But I will be right
All
back.
right.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Good morning.
Good morning, who's on?
Miss Odysseus.
Hi, Odysseus. This is Jennifer Williams, and Tomas Ball from Kentucky is on as well.
Good morning.
Morning, Odysseus.
Hi, Tomas.
Tomas. Hello, who just joined? Did someone just join?
Yes, this is Larry Lemon from Regent Street.
Hello, Larry.
Hi.
It's Jennifer, Odysseus, and Tomas, and I think someone else just joined.
This is Jeremy.
Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, John here.
It's like I'm in a meeting with you all the time. I'm so lucky.
That is true.
Do we have others on the line?
Oh, hello, Sean.
Hi.
Yes, we have Tomas, Odysseus, Jeremy, and Larry.
Great. Let's give others a time.
Pardon me?
Yes?
Oh. Okay, I thought someone had a question. Sorry.
Oh. Odysseus, are you okay with giving folks a couple minutes here and seeing who else might join this morning?
Absolutely. I saw an announcement on that Regent Street is releasing software to the Indiana Health Information Exchange yesterday, and your name was prominent in the news release.
Yes. Somebody had to step up to the plate, so. Yep, we're in a new phase. I'm happy to chat with you at some point about that if you'd like to.
Sure, sure.
Do we want to give everyone until 5 after?
Yeah, I think that's our general practice, just to make sure that we give
a
chance, given the different parts of the world they might be coming from.
And just so everyone on the line knows, we do have on the wiki the meeting agenda with open Google Notes if anybody's interested. If you don't have a link, let me know and I can send it out. Hello, did someone just join us?
Stacey Durkin from Healthy GRC.
Hello, Stacey.
Hello.
No, my watch now says 8:05, so we can start it.
Sure. Sounds good.
Very well. Well, welcome, everyone. It's good to have you all on our community call on a Friday morning. I guess it totally depends on where you're from, so I'm speaking relatively to the eastern coast of the U.S. I assume everybody has the agenda in front of them. Is that a good assumption?
Yes.
I don't hear very well. Notice that the notes for the meeting will be updated dynamically as we go through it, so feel free to add your own comments or correct things as we go along. Are there any other items that you would like to add to the agenda beyond what we have already? Very well. So let's get started with the first item, which is an introduction by all. I'll get started. My name is Odysseus Pentakulos. I'm with SysNet International, and we are responsible for the design development of OpenEMPI over the past 6 years.
And I'll go next. Sean Granis. I'm with the Regan Streiff Institute and work with Odysseus. And this team increasingly on OpenEMPI and component of the Open Health Exchange.
This is Jennifer Williams, and I also work at Regan Streiff, and I am the project manager for this project on the Regan Streiff site.
This is Larry Lemon, rounding out the Regan Streiff. I work with the Indiana Health Exchange on what we call the Global Registry, which is equivalent to the EMPI, and so I'm very interested in learning about what's going on.
My name is Jamie Thomas. I'm with Regan Streiff as well, and I'm a project communication coordinator for the OpenHIE project all around. So.
And I'm Jeremy Kuiper. I also work at Regan Streiff. I work with OpenMRS and OpenEMPI, sort of ramping up my time on OpenEMPI now. I haven't spent much time except for recently on it, but I am involved, so I'm happy to be here.
I'm Alex Gavino from the Philippines, and I'm working with Dr. Alvin Marcello, Philippine Health Insurance Corporation. So we're trying to get to know more about because we are trying to build our health enterprise architecture for the Philippine health insurance. Thank you.
This is Tom Ashgar from the Mark Cancer Center at the University of Kentucky. I'm managing a data warehouse and hoping to use OpenEMPI as the master patient index. And I work with Sean and Jennifer on another project.
Let's see, did we get everyone? I don't think I heard an introduction from Stacy.
I'm Stacy Jerkin. I'm with Healthy GRC. We are an integration company building interfaces using the MIRTH platform, working with a client who is actually looking to implement OpenEMPI.
Great. Welcome, Stacy. Stacy, how do you spell your last name? I didn't quite catch it.
D is in David, U-R-K-I-N.
Very good. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sean, you're next on the agenda, so take it away.
Sure. One of the processes we talked a little bit about last time, and it's something we've done before, is developing a mission, vision, value statement for this group. And at some level, you know, sometimes I don't know how many of you have gone through the process of developing a mission, vision, value statement. I've had some good experiences and some not so good experiences with in the past, but most recently we've been using something called a one-text process. It's a process where the group helps to, you know, collaboratively create this vision, and I've actually been very pleased with the outcomes for some of my other initiatives. And frankly, I think it's really important to have a mission and vision statement, because projects like these can be complex and be, you know, many dimensional, lots of activities or perspectives being shared. And it's important to be able to decide, is our activity and our direction consistent with what we think the mission of this community is? And developing a mission is not necessarily a static thing that once you develop it, it's locked in stone forever, but it provides good approximate guideposts for how the community is functioning. I think it also gives us a chance to think about and introspect on what it is we are doing. And so I'm going to briefly describe my experience with the process before, and you may have heard Jamie Thomas introduce herself as well. Jamie has helped to sort of oversee or administer the one text process. Essentially, what we do is we start with a very rough draft of a mission, vision, value statement, and we ask for each individual to provide input to that statement. The first version of the document is not going to be perfect. In fact, it's probably going to be wrong in many ways, and that's where you folks can help contribute and modify and tweak the statement to get it to the right place. We'll do this through a couple of iterations, but it's key that you provide that feedback. We're not asking for sort of a group perspective, but we're asking for your individual perspective. That feedback is taken back, the document updated, and we'll go through the iteration a couple of times. It doesn't take very long for you to review, and it's really important that we get your feedback on it. Again, these are high-level perspectives, but any comments you have will be helpful and will actually help inform the document. And so, Jamie, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that, what I've missed, and, you know, particular administrative aspects of this.
Actually, I think that really just nailed it. Yeah, we will go through a couple different iterations of this. We find it to be important that when you do send back your criticism to the original statements, that you send those back to only myself. And that way, everybody feels comfortable with sharing their thoughts and anonymously. And so that way, we can build a statement in which everybody has contributed to. I guess really, if there's just any questions on that, answering those now.
So, some of the next steps, I'm sorry, Jamie, did I interrupt you?
No, you're fine.
Okay. Some of the next steps will be we will disseminate a document, again, that's very draft, after sometime after this call, for you to provide feedback on, and we'll iterate this probably over the next days to a couple weeks, and again, look forward to your feedback. Pretty lightweight process. It's not a real heavy involvement, but again, each of you have different perspectives on what a community should look like, and together I think we can create a pretty strong statement of purpose for this group. And I think that's important to help us sort of shore up our identity and helps us think about who we are and what we want to be. Any questions about that process? All right. Well, that's what I have. You'll be seeing an email or a communication after the call with a pointer to the draft document.
So, Ms. Odysseus, do we have a target date of when we would like to have this completed by?
I would like to see us have it completed over the next 2 weeks, if possible.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that, you know, you go through the iterations, and it usually only takes 2 to 4 times, I would say. But it just depends on how much feedback we get back. You know, if you don't get enough feedback, people still may feel that the statements aren't strong enough, but really getting the feedback to make those statements stronger. So it's really all about the feedback and the participation that we have.
Very good. Any other comments or questions? So the 2 weeks is an approximation. That's an ideal state, and I'm hopeful that we can achieve that. But if we're plus or minus on that, I think we'll be fine. Very good. Why don't we move on in the agenda? Unless there are any other questions. One of the activities we'd like to have occur on the calls is to give some of the community members an opportunity to share their perspectives and their needs and what they're thinking about in terms of MPI needs and how they might be using OpenEMPI. And we've asked Tomas Gall, who's at the University of Kentucky, we've given him an opportunity to sort of describe what they're thinking about and what he's thinking about in terms of using OpenEMPI, and maybe having the community hear about it might be useful, A, for the community, and B, Tomas might get some reasonable feedback. And it's helpful, I think, for me personally to understand at maybe a more finer grained level how people are thinking about using OpenEMPI, and that might help us to further tailor the community, you know, in terms of what we put on agendas and what sort of artifacts and features, functionalities, documentation might get built into the process moving forward. So I guess I would just note, as Tomas mentioned, we've worked personally with him on some other projects related to cancer registries, and that was how we made the connection there. But it's been a pleasure to be able to work with Tomas, and I guess I would, Tomas, if you'd like to say a little bit more about, and by way of introducing yourself, please feel free, but the floor is yours at this point.
Thank you, Sean. So my name is Tomas Gall. I'm an assistant professor of biomedical informatics at the University of Kentucky. And I'm also, I have a double appointment. My other appointment is with the Martin Cancer Center. I'm the manager of the data procurement and warehousing. So we are building this data warehouse. This is actually, it's a cancer research data warehouse at the Martin Cancer Center. And if you look at the agenda, if you have access to it, I put a link there, which would bring up a PDF document, which is a very high-level architecture of our vision of our data warehouse. Most of the parts are already in place. I don't know if everyone on the call were able to open that or not yet. I don't know.
Are others able to see that link in the agenda? The agenda document actually has a link to the document Tomas is referring to.
Yes. So,
it did open Tomas for me, just to let you know.
Okay. So what it is basically, this is a data warehouse where we pool data from many different data sources. Most of these data sources are actually operational working information systems of one kind of or another. I would just go through, you know, on some of them. And so basically these operational databases, we get the data from these through an ETL process, extract, transform, and load process. Obviously, since these are, some of them are coming from outside of our domain, we don't have power over, you know, most of the data that's coming in, so we need to do a lot of transformation so the data would follow our standards, and also we would do a matching of the patients, because these are all cancer patients, most of them are cancer patients, and they are coming from independent data sources, and we would have, you know, the same patients in the different databases, and so we need to match them. So one of the biggest data source is the SEER Kentucky Cancer Registry, which is the state cancer registry of Kentucky. It basically contains of data of all cancer patients from diagnosis to basically the end of life, back to the early 1980s. We have about, I would say, 600,000 patients in there with a couple of million cancer cases. And we pull, so we, you know, for these patients, the Kentucky Cancer Registry collects a very detailed record system, and we pull some of the data over from the actual operational database. Another data source is the Moffitt Cancer Center's tissue banking system. Right now we're using CA tissue for that. We are just moving over to the Encore BSM system from CA tissue. So we are getting data from that system. The other is our statewide electronic pathology reporting system, where we are receiving pathology reports from all over Kentucky, from about 90% of the pathology labs in Kentucky, and also from other labs outside of Kentucky who are managing Kentucky patients. This system goes back to the early 2003s, I would say. We have about 700,000 pathology reports from mostly cancer patients. This is a very important data source for us, because this is basically, from most of the path labs, this is real-time feed. So we get the pathology reports basically the same time as the physician gets the reports in their offices. And so using these reports, we can do rapid case ascertainment. So for example, we're using this for a lung cancer study, where it's very important to identify lung cancer patients early, because unfortunately they die soon. So this is a very good source for us to identify patients for clinical trials and other studies. We are just starting to build up a similar system for the diagnostic radiology reports. Right now we are receiving diagnostic radiology reports from three large medical systems in Kentucky, the Northern system, the Baptist, Central Baptist, and so the Baptist healthcare system, University of Kentucky, and I think one more. I don't remember where. The next one is our Encore clinical trials system, where we get data. It basically contains all data for the clinical trials of the Markey Cancer Center. We also receive data from EMR systems from the University of Kentucky, from Norton, and from the Baptist hospitals. We also have a small, and we just started to work on this pathology imaging system, where we have a pretty high-rank researcher here at the University of Kentucky who's identifying image biomarkers from pathology slides. And so we work with him, and we build up this pathology imaging system. And we have several different research studies where we receive data back from cancer patients, and we basically put that data back together with the original patient data. Another source which is on top is the UK clinical data warehouse. This is more a management type, an enterprise level decision making data warehouse. So it has all the billing data and everything, and they're working. It's still in progress, and they're working on adding new data sources for themselves altogether. But the UK clinical data warehouse contains data for all UK patients, not just the cancer patients. And in the middle of all this is basically the master patient index, which we are hoping to basically accomplish with OpenEMPI. Right now it's I'm doing matching using another software. I don't know if you heard about Linkplot, the CDC's matching software. And so the hope is that OpenEMPI will do this functionality. And I'm going to talk in a minute about how we need to accomplish this. And connecting to this, we are hoping to create a master patient annotation list, basically, which what we are hoping to do is pooling data from all these different data marts in the data warehouse, and basically linking discrete facts with patients. So, for example, if in a pathology report we identified a certain diagnosis for a patient, then we would like to put this diagnosis with this patient in this patient annotation list. We are using natural language processing for accomplishing this. As a lot of data in this data warehouse in just text format. So back to the master patient index, we got to know OpenEMPI through Sean as we were talking about this, and we really like the idea, and we like the architecture, how OpenEMPI started out. We like the functionality that, it is able to match patients from the different data sources, and it has a domain system where you can refer back to the original data source using I guess it these are namespaces in some IDs. One functionality that we miss and that we would like to see working is instead of loading flat data files into OpenEMPI, we would like to be able to connect directly database tables and pull data from database tables and do the matching between those. And basically, the process that we would like to follow would be as we build up this master patient index, we would like to start with our pretty much largest data source, which is the SEER, Kennedy Cancer Registry, data mart in this diagram, and start building up the master patient index starting with that. And so for example, first we would match the KCR data with let's say EMR data and basically add the patients in these two data sources into the master patient index, and then link all the other data sources one by one to the already existing master patient index, and either if the patient is already existing in the master patient index, then add a reference to the new data source for that patient. If the patient is not existing in the master patient index, then create a new patient. And once the this original master patient index is built up, we would run basically a scheduled task every night or at some period of time to check each data sources for new patients who were not matched against the master patient index yet, and basically arrived the day before, and do a matching on those new patients periodically, and that's how we would build our master patient index. So that's the high level. I don't know if you want to go down to how this might or might not work in development, and how we thought we would do this with OpenEMPI.
Sure, thanks, Tomas. I just I want to confirm master patient annotation sounds to me, just to be clear what that is, sounds like you're gathering additional observations largely through NLP processes, and you need some place to store those observations. So is the master patient annotation database really akin to the other sort of green databases you have there, in that they have clinical data or some sort of derived information from clinical data sources on the patient? So it represents another, essentially a derived clinical data source?
Yes, I mean, it would be, as you said, all the data that would be in the annotation database would exist in other data sources. It would be basically a distilled and easily queryable source to get data about patients easy. So that how what you basically said, run NLPs on text and pull discrete data elements out, or for example, we are hoping to get lab data from the clinical data warehouse, from the UK clinical data warehouse, and we're not sure what format that is going to be, so that might be in text format also. So we would just distill down from different data sources these discrete data elements and make it easily queryable.
Sure. Do you have a sense of approximately, not an exact number, but how many unique patients there are across all of these data sources?
I would say somewhere between 800 and 1.5 million patients.
Okay. And do you have a sense of, on a daily basis, what the number of new patients or new transactions are that need to be adjudicated?
Well, I think I know most about the EPAS database, and that's one of the most active data source that we have right now. And we are receiving about somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 reports a week. Those are, you know, those are not all unique patients, but I would say about 1,000 patients a week.
Okay. Very good. So the model you illustrate here, while it's, you know, for research purposes or for a particular purpose, this very much follows the sort of pattern of, you know, what we see emerging in, you know, with healthcare systems, whether it's here in the U.S. or abroad, you know, where you have multiple different data sources and the patient's identity needs to be adjudicated across that system in, you know, some sort of fashion. So I think the, you know, the pattern you describe here is very consistent with the general pattern that we see on a fairly regular basis.
Right. I think the big difference from the current model of what OpenEMPI is that since these you know, these data sources are really independent and we don't have any control over what's going on the, you know, on site, for example, at the path labs where these reports are coming from, we cannot control what kind of IDs they use.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go, well, we need to get the basic patient identifier, social security number, names, date of birth, whatever we can get, and then try to match them and basically create our own IDs and store these patients in the database.
Thomas, this is Odysseus. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, could you comment on the quality of the patient demographic data that you're seeing from the various sources? I suspect that it varies by source, but I would just like to see, to hear what you, if you could comment on that. And the other question is, do you have an idea of what kind of a duplication rate you're finding in those sources right now with your existing tools?
Right. So, yeah, as you said, the sources differ, you know, in a lot of different, you know, IDs what we can get from. Fortunately, most of these data come through even the, you know, the pathology report data, the electronic medical records data, all come through the SEER Kentucky Cancer Registry. And the Kentucky Cancer Registry is basically a public health agency, and they have they are not covered by HIPAA. So we can basically say that we need to get social security numbers, we need to get this identifier, and the hospitals and other, you know, the path labs that are sending the data basically have to obey that. We are covered by state law, and we have the right to get this data and review this data, even for non-cancer patients, because we have the right to find the cancer patients. So that makes things much easier in terms of HIPAA and other privacy related issues. but still, you know, there is data that just doesn't exist, so we cannot get. Obviously, social security number is a big concern at a lot of places, so I would say that we have social security numbers for about 80% of the cases. Usually names and date of birth is the, you know, that's identifiers that we usually can get. We can usually get addresses from most of the places where they store them. So, you know, I guess it's just as with anything else, everyone who deals with this kind of healthcare data know that, you know, you will never have all the IDs all the time. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good. Also,
so what was the
do
other?
You have an idea of what kind of match rate you're getting right now, or kind of a duplicate rate? It's probably an easier question to answer with the existing tools.
Well, so it's hard to say that these are duplicates because you know, these are coming from different sources, so they are not duplicated in terms of that the same data is stored for the same patients, but we have a pretty good idea of the cancer population of Kentucky. That's what basically the Kentucky Cancer Registry does, and so basically we very rarely find new verified cancer cases who are not in the Kentucky Cancer Registry already. So basically, I would say that the Kentucky Cancer Registry data for cancer patients is the gold standard, and then we match, you know, all the other data sources against that, and we obviously use all these data sources as case finding sources. So that's one of the reasons we have all these data sources to find new cancer cases and cancer patients. But I would say that unless it's obviously new cancer cases, we most of the time would have the patients already in the Kentucky Cancer Registry database. And obviously we have some smaller studies where we also collect data on controls for, you know, research studies or some other cases where we have non-cancer patients, and that's another question because those are usually just new patients. But I mean, it's hard to say that when I do a matching between, you know, Kentucky Cancer Registry and, for example, pathology report, what would be the overlapping? I would say it's somewhere around 80% usually.
So that sounds like a great overview, Tomas. Just looking at time, I wonder if I might want to be wrapping this up. You've done a great job and very much appreciated, and I know I personally have a better understanding of sort of how you're thinking about this. One question maybe to contemplate as we move forward is, how would you like to see the community inform or engage in what you're contemplating here?
So obviously, as I said, or most important feature here would be to be able to connect to databases directly instead of flat data files. And I already started to look at that, and I'm hoping to get a student here from computer science working on that with me. And we are willing to basically develop that feature and provide that back to the project, even in the form of a plugin, or I guess we will talk about, you know, what kind of architecture it's going to be in.
And
I guess we go with the flow with the other improvements. What we talked about last time on the call all sounded very good to me.
What I might suggest, given our limited time, I'm pleased to hear your willingness to contribute, is maybe to think about, we in other open source projects that we work on, there's a developers call, and I'm not suggesting we start off having multiple calls, but the point I'm trying to make is that there's, you know, sometimes we talk a little bit about design as a group, and then, you know, can, you know, sort of hack out a design, you know, by talking amongst people, and then, you know, once a design is pretty clear, moving forward with actually implementing it. And I think it might be the case that people like Odysseus and others might have some ideas about how the database connectivity can be accomplished. And so if there's some way to just make that dialogue transparent so people can participate in it, that might be useful, may actually help speed up your process as well.
Sure, thank you.
So let's think about that anyways. But why don't we move on to some of the next steps, and we'll make sure that we follow up in terms of, the database connectivity piece as we move forward. we had an agenda item on for this call that's a running item that just relates to any other requests to express or ask questions about needs or interests that people are seeing that you want to articulate. Essentially, what we'd like to do is to be able to have give people a forum to sort of talk about, like Tomas did, what your needs are, where you are in, you know, your identification process, and, you know, even if it's just saying, hey, I don't know where to start, but I'd really like to roll up my sleeves. But this is an opportunity for folks on the call to maybe express either a desire to share or a desire to figure out how to become more engaged. So I'm going to just pause for a second and see, give everyone the floor to see what comments, questions, or ideas you have. And we may be reaching out to some folks, too, like we had talked with Tomas, maybe just asking folks to share briefly some of their interests on upcoming calls as well, if that resonates with people, if people find it useful.
This is Jeremy. I have a use case that just came to mind as we were talking, and I don't know how much of it would be handled by OpenEMPI. But in a situation where we are migrating data from servers running the same platform, but building their own patient data separate from ours, we went through several rounds of patient matching strategies using similar algorithms to what OpenEMPI is using. And we are still sort of stuck with the task of doing the migration of patient information, and I wonder how far into the patient record does EMPI go to share data with other systems?
So what I'm taking away from your question, Jeremy, is maybe we want to carve out some time at some point to talk about how OpenEMPI can be used to maybe migrate separate systems into a unified MPI. Is that
Yes. Is
that what you're describing?
Yes, and not just that, but also with other data involved, like encounters and observations and things like that.
Okay, well, why don't we you know, put that on the list of topics to maybe to address on an upcoming call?
Sure.
I think it's a good one. Good. Other comments or questions at this point? Okay. And Jeremy, on the heels of your comment, we have carved out some time for you to talk a little bit about the algorithm enhancement piece that we've been discussing. If you just want to explain to folks sort of what's going on there and maybe give a brief update.
Sure. Essentially, the Fligi Center algorithm, which is the probabilistic matching algorithm, or at least one of them that's possible for matching patients, has a particular characteristic where some of the matching that it puts together is undesirable. There's a summary of this on the wiki. The title is Enhancements to Probabilistic Matching Algorithm. The idea is that we have a potential of vector selection. We have several vectors that come out of matching on certain attributes. So if we, for instance, the example that's given in the page, if we had four attributes that we wanted to match on, that would expand out to 16 permutations of those attributes. Out of those 16, the Fligi Center algorithm may actually give us a score that matches high, but by knowing our data, we would say that score should not actually score high. we prefer to have that vector not be considered in a match, so that we can sort of hand tweak the results from the Fuligi Center analysis. So that's the task that I've taken on, and Odysseus provided a lot of information on this page, as well as taking a look at the code, and he's helping me get up and running. I've just kind of come onto the project in the last month, and I'm still kind of ramping up the time that I can do each week. But nonetheless, I know there's a lot of knowledge in here. It shouldn't be that hard for me to implement. I have found most of the files that work with the Fuligi Center algorithm. There's a lot of passing it around, so I'm following the path right now, looking at exactly how the Fuligi Center algorithm is used and where the scoring is being done. So I think, honestly, right now we're not talking about using a UI. We're talking about hard coding it to just have a proof of concept, and then introduce it into the UI later as a list of vectors, and I think an example of their scores, and being able to pick and choose which ones should be not considered in a match. I think that's about all I have to talk about.
Sure.
This. I hope it didn't go over. I hope it wasn't too techy, but there's, unfortunately, with this particular topic,
no,
it's kind of hard not to be techy.
I think that's a great summary, and I guess I might just perhaps summarize where while the matching algorithm that OpenEMPI uses, and basically all of the commercial, you know, any matching MPI software worth its salt uses this algorithm, those practitioners who actually use it recognize that it's not a perfect algorithm, and it often needs to be tweaked. And what we're doing is we're building in the ability to address some of the limitations of that algorithm, I guess, the highest level way I'd say it. To allow the people who, A, know their own data, and, B, have a basic understanding of the algorithm to go in and make the improvements that they would like and customize it and tailor to their needs. So, good job.
Thanks. I'd like to add one more comment to this, Odysseus. Express more the value of this is that in a production system where you have millions of records that you need to evaluate, being able to tailor the accuracy of the algorithm means that you're going to have a lot less work to do in manually assigning, resolving possible matches on records. So being able to tailor the algorithm specifically for a particular installation will help tremendously in being able to manage a large workload. So I see tremendous value in this enhancement.
I hope to have something running by next week. So I really don't think it'll take a whole lot of effort to find the part where it... Anyways, the whole point is I think we should have something in the next week to look at.
Excellent. Any other questions about the algorithm enhancement? There's a lot of detail here, and if there's enough interest on folks' part where we need to sort of unpack this a little bit more, happy to do so, because we want you folks to understand as much or as little as you'd like to understand about this process. And you've got the link to the Enhancements Wiki site where the discussion is going on, so hopefully you can consume as much or as little as you'd like there. Why don't we've got about 7 minutes left. Odysseus, did you want to provide an update on the performance evaluation piece? Anything? I think that may have just been a placeholder there, but anything to add there?
Sure. I'll be very quick since we don't have a lot of time. As I mentioned in the past call, we've been doing performance testing to understand the capacity limits of OpenEMPI and also to identify areas where we could improve that performance. And the portion of this effort that I would like to discuss today is the the workload that we have defined. We have come up with a workload that describes the main transactional operations that an EMPI in general would have to support in a production environment. And that involves the ability to support the addition of new records, updates to records, queries for records, and so on. All the main transactions that you would expect an EMPI to be able to support. And we have developed a script that automates this process. And what we plan to do is integrate it into our continuous integration environment, so we continuously test the performance of the system to make sure that we preserve the existing performance and also to evaluate potential enhancements. So I would just like to throw this out there and see if there are any suggestions on what else we could do to improve both the script and also the process that we're following. We plan to add more documentation on the wiki to describe specifically the workload itself and the process that we're using. And if anybody in the community has any suggestions or recommendations or would like to get involved, let us know. I was able to complete that in about a minute, so I hope that was good, Sean.
Any questions for Odysseus at this point? I guess a high-level takeaway is that, you know, in addition to having a very accurate matching algorithm, you also want a very performant matching system. And so we want to ensure that it's both accurate and fast, and or at least meets the desired expectations. And so the performance evaluation is designed to help, you know, ensure that the system is capable of scaling to, you know, the size of populations that, you know, states and countries and other regions might be interested in. So, good. Thanks, Odysseus.
You're welcome.
And so we're at the end of our agenda, in terms of next steps, as we've mentioned, and others can chime in here, but we'll get a link to the mission, vision, values document out there. Again, would appreciate 5 or 10 minutes of your time to review the document. It will have some specific questions in it for you to answer. Shouldn't take that long, and we'll go through an iterative process there. We'll probably be reaching out to folks in the community to see if there's anyone with a specific desire to, as Tomas did today, describe where they see themselves plugging into the community and what their specific needs are, and we'll go from there. Jennifer, other action items that we need to think about at this point?
I think that you hit them. I'm just scrolling through to check, double check. Nope. Looks like our main focus is going to be response to the mission, vision, values statement.
Great. And you know, I know there were folks on the line who probably are just getting up to speed and listening at this point, but welcome to those first-time attendees. Please provide us feedback if there are specific questions you have, specific needs you have. We're happy to try to incorporate them into the calls and help you get up to speed on where the client registry community is going. So thanks again. Any other comments? Order, give you back minutes of your day. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a good day. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.